This is some discussions here, about this review of Guru Tattva, to remind all of us, those that have gurus and guardians that are guiding them and supporting them and teaching them and freeing them from the cycle of birth and death, they can appreciate the great fortune they've attained by attaining the shelter of Sadguru, by hearing these topics about the identity and the relationship with the guru. And those that don't have guru, they can hear something about what are the qualifications of guru and what is the need for guru. The first discussion, I thought, is the need for guru. So this is a very interesting point here. It's called transformative knowledge versus inductive knowledge. Transformative knowledge versus inductive knowledge. Because in other yoga paths, you lift yourself up. It's uplifting. It's a path of upliftment. Ours is also the path of upliftment, but we are lifted up by someone else. It's called anugraha, Bhagavan anugraha, kripa, mercy. Everyone in India has heard this term, guru kripa hi kevalam. So guru kripa hi kevalam applies everywhere, but especially in bhakti yoga. Guru kripa hi kevalam, Vaishnava kripa hi kevalam, Nam kripa hi kevalam. There is nothing, only, this is the only thing. Whereas another path of Ashtanga yoga or Siddhi yoga or any other path, Gyan, Karma, guru and teacher is also required to a certain extent. And then you become master, you become a Siddhi, yogi, and you become a teacher yourself. I studied Raj yoga when I was a Karmi in college. And I had a teacher, and without his mercy, I wouldn't have learned the techniques of pranayama or meditation. And he had books also. But then at a certain point, I become the teacher. Goodbye, teacher. I'm the teacher now. Or maybe hello, teacher. But bhakti is very special in the fact that it's all coming. We endeavor at every step of the game, from the beginning, even when we become so-called adept or perfect in bhakti, which means attain prema, even then we depend on mercy to go forward and to go up. Whereas in other yoga systems, you get to a point where you're liberated, or you're Brahman realized, or you attain siddhis, you practice yoga to attain siddhis. And you, by your own endeavor and by your own submission and practice, but of course ultimately it's the mercy of the super soul or of God that we get any talents or abilities. But at least one thinks that I've done this. I've mastered this. And when you enroll it with his teacher, he'll say, listen, you have to master this technique. He uses this phrase. It teaches you different postures or different types of meditation. It said you practice and you have to master this. But in our line, we become mastered. In the bhakti path, we become mastered. We don't become the master. We become mastered. So these are some ideas that I've collected, and I gave a summary. But I can write much better than I can speak. So we can't really understand the absolute truth, the personality of the absolute truth, simply by independent study of scriptures. In colleges, sometimes they have independent study courses. When you're like in third year or so, you can do independent study in a particular field, psychology, and especially when you're doing PhD, then it's so much independent study under the guidance of a professor. Research, writing, collecting. You don't even go to school, you don't even go to class, but you're doing your study and collecting your information for your thesis. But in Bhakti Gyan, on the Bhakti Marg, independent study is only part of the success formula. So we can't understand the absolute truth simply by independent study of scripture, only relying on our limited mind and senses. What will independent study of the scriptures? Independent study of the scriptures means I read the books. I have a brain, I have intelligence, I have eyes, I can read and study the books. I have so much understanding of philosophy and religion, so I'll study Bhagavat, Bhagavat Shravan. I'll study the philosophy of Bhagavat on my own. So what you'll get from that study, independent study, you'll get knowledge. You'll get some knowledge. But you won't get the essence. It's like rupam and vastu. You'll get gyan, but you won't get Vigyan. Because the missing element is this transformative power. Independent study of scriptures, you will not experience the transformative power of that transcendental knowledge. So therefore, independent study will actually miss the essence of the Vedas. The Vedas are all about transformation. And the highest transformation is the transformation of a caterpillar into a butterfly. Right? It's called metamorphosis. Caterpillar becomes butterfly, right? Creamy becomes patang, or whatever. So, this is what happens. And the Vedic knowledge is actually meant to create the ultimate transformation in the conditioned soul. And the ultimate transformation is to give up this kalevaram and not to merge into Brahman, but to give up this worm-like material body and realize our beautiful Siddhadeya. And engage in experiencing a loving relationship with Krishna in the spiritual world. This is the ultimate transformative effect of Vedic knowledge. This is the ultimate point. This is the Vedanta. Vedanta leads to this transformation. So, what's the missing element? Without the mercy of Guru, which is attained by submission and seva, independent study of the scriptures will yield knowledge, but not wisdom. Gyan means knowledge, vigyan means wisdom or realization, which means transformation. You see, many professors, they've done PhDs on the theology of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the rasa tattva of Rupa Goswami, rasa theology of Rupa Goswami, many, many professors in France, Germany, Switzerland, America, hundreds and hundreds of essays and theses have been written on Gaudiya Vedanta, Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy. But the professors, they undergo their study, they deeply read all the books, they know Sanskrit, they know Bengali. We don't know Sanskrit, we don't know Bengali. But they deeply study day and night, and they have so much ability to understand philosophy and religion, and they publish so many books. And then they publish a thesis. And they get a PhD in Gaudiya Vedanta, or Gaudiya Theology, or the Rasa Theology of Rupa Goswami, or the Tattva Siddhanta of Jiva Goswami. You can go on the internet, you can find so many papers on all these subjects, all from professors all around the world. But then you go and meet them and say, and ask, what type of life do you have? What is your lifestyle? What are your actions? What is your behavior? What is your conception? What is your goal of life? And how are you working to achieve it? And you'll find out, for the most part, 99 out of 100 of those professors will say, eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow you die. Eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow you die. And basically, in so many words, although they fluff it up and expand it with lots of innuendos and intellectual professor-type language to make it look polished and professional. But the bottom line is, ahara, nidra, maitun, bhayam. Eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. So, what happened? They are an example. These erudite, recognized, famous professors are examples of the independent study of Vedic literature. It yielded great wisdom, gave them knowledge, gyan, but no vigyan, no wisdom. Wisdom changes personality. Wisdom changes lifestyles. Wisdom changes outlook. Wisdom changes the viewpoint of the heart. So there was no, although they contacted the highest source of all knowledge, the Veda, they did not derive the essence of the Vedic study. They simply went away with a few pieces of glass in the terms of PhD in Rasa Theology. They attained their PhD in Rasa Theology. But that's like pieces of glass compared to the Chintamani gems that are available in the Vedic literature. The Chintamani gem of the Vedic study is the Prem Sarup, to realize one's love-filled, joy-filled body. Prem Sarup Vigyan. Prem Sarup Vigyan, to realize the love-filled body that we all have, which is transcendental and spiritual. So we have to transform. In metamorphosis, metamorph, change of morph, change of form. to give up this conditional form, which is rotating in the samsara, and attain the eternal form of loving bliss in the spiritual world. That's an ultimate transformation, and that's the ultimate contribution of the Vedantic study. So this is one point. So vigyan means realization. What does realization mean? Realization means transformation. When we serve the Guru and study the Vedas together, then we'll get vigyan, the higher wisdom, vision and power and ability to see the world differently and then change our lifestyle accordingly to match our change of consciousness. Change of consciousness, change of actions. Change of actions, change of lifestyle. Change of lifestyle from material to spiritual, from body-centered life to soul-centered life. Now everybody has material consciousness, so they're body-centered. Their life is body-centered. When we attain spiritual consciousness, we become soul-centered. This is vigyan, or transformative wisdom. Gyan means you amass and collect knowledge, then you use it and control it for your selfish purposes. This is gyan. You collect and amass lots of knowledge, then you control that knowledge and you use it for your own selfish purposes. Now let's look at vigyan. Vigyan is genuine spiritual knowledge, which means that you submit to the Vedas, the wisdom, and that wisdom, that Vedic wisdom, uses you. The wisdom controls you and engages you in the selfless service of the Supreme Lord, devotional service, bhakti yoga. So material knowledge, which is called gyan, even if it's the material subject of Ashtanga yoga or anything, you get that knowledge and you have power. And then you control that knowledge. And then you use it to get name, fame, enjoyment, position. But when we get this knowledge, bhakti gyan, this vigyan, realization of Krishna, understanding of Krishna, that knowledge controls us. The knowledge says, submit over here. It says, tadvidi pranipatena paripashnena sevaya. It's very interesting, this comparison. So the wisdom uses us, we don't use the wisdom. A materialist engages knowledge in his service, for his purposes. But this vigyan, or Vedic vigyan, this knowledge engages us in it for its purpose. So the real purpose of Vedic knowledge is to engage all of us as a servant of the servant of the servant. As Prabhupada was saying, we heard this morning on the tape, he said that, what is the essence of Krishna consciousness? The essence of Krishna consciousness is to be a servant of the servant of the servant, 100 times, 1,000,000 times removed, servant of the servant. When he realizes this, he is a liberated soul. And Prabhupada, and then, so everyone's trying to become God, but instead of becoming God, they're becoming dog. That's right, dog. So this is all together in one sentence, Prabhupada said like this. And we played the bag a few times to see if we could absorb some of the inner meaning. So what is the essence of Krishna consciousness? Someone says you're practicing Krishna consciousness. What is the essence? The essence is to become a servant of the servant of the servant, 100 times removed, 1,000,000 times removed, servant of the servant. This is the essence of Krishna consciousness. One who understands this, he is a liberated soul. Jivan mukta siyuchate. Iha yasya harer dasye. Iha yasya harer dasye. One who realizes haridas, haridasi. So you submit to the Vedas, the wisdom, and it uses you. The wisdom controls you. And the wisdom engages you in the selfless service. Material knowledge, we become more selfish. Oh, I got this knowledge of computers and management, business management. I have a PhD in business management. And I go off into the field and I use that knowledge. I control that knowledge. Now that knowledge serves me to fulfill my purpose. I want a big house and a big bungalow and a big car, big vacations, right? And then what do you get? Big headache. big bellyache. Oh, I can't digest my food. I have acid stomach. And that acid's burning my brain, so I have a headache too. Two in one. Two for the price of my selfishness. Radhe, Radhe. I like this phrase. It's so nice. Vigyan, genuine spiritual knowledge means you submit to the Vedas. Because when we get material knowledge, that knowledge submits to me. Hey, knowledge, you work for me now. I learned how to play guitar. Now, knowledge, you work for me. Ding, 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 ding. All right? And you play guitar because you have musical knowledge of the notes and all these things. The wisdom, it uses you. The wisdom controls you and engages you in the selfless service of the Supreme Lord, bhakti. Because in this study of Vedas, we see this term tattva darshan. Krishna's telling in Gita, chapter 4, verse 34, Tadvidhi pranipatena pariprasnena sevaya upadakshanti te gyanam gyaninas tatvadarshan. Tatvadarshan. Independent study of the Vedas will not yield transcendental perception. The ultimate purpose of Vedantic study is to perceive God, to realize God, to see God. Everyone practices some yoga system and they meet someone on the street. Oh, can you show me God? I want to see God. Does he look like this or he looks like that? Like we met, there's one lady here from Iran and she wanted to know what God looked like and she was curious and asking. She's Muslim from birth and they couldn't really tell her because God has no face. there's no, you know, Allah's faceless or whatever, you know. So then somehow she got a picture of Shyam Sundar, you know, Ghanashyam. And she said, oh. And someone said, this is, some Hindu friend said, this is God. She's, wow, it looks good. It looks really good. Really looks beautiful. Shyam Sundar. Ghanashyam Radhe Radhe. Ghanashyam Radhe Radhe.
Ghanashyam Radhe Radhe. Ghanashyam Radhe Radhe.
Nikunja Mevi Radhe. Ghanashyam Radhe Radhe.
Nikunja Mevi Radhe. Ghanashyam Radhe Radhe.
Ghanashyam Radhe Radhe. Ghanashyam Radhe Radhe. So the first point we made about is that independent study of Vedas will not give us true wisdom. And true wisdom means that we change, we become a changed person. It's not that we sit in Bhagavad Sapta for 7 days and it's very nice and nice music and the speaker looks very attractive, he has a very beautiful voice and he tells lots of funny stories also and some good jokes in Hindi. And then even puts on some dramas and dresses up somebody as Vamanadeva, and the little boy comes out as Vamanadeva on his 8th canto. And then his 10th canto and his Gopal Puja, and they put a deity on the stage of Gopal, and they offer Anukut, and everybody comes. This is going on. So people attend these 7-day educational Bhagavats, entertaining Bhagavad Saptahas. And it's good. They get some benefit, they get some Sukriti, to ultimately meet a pure devotee of the Lord. And we'll tell them as it is. Like it is, as it is. So they hear the Bhagavat philosophy, they hear the highest philosophy of Bhagavat, but yet there's no transformation. Because they're not hearing from proper guru. They're just hearing from a money person. It's called professional. As soon as money is mixed in, then that dilution of the money, that addition of the money, wisdom comes and vigyan goes. That's the difference. So the second point is, what is this tattva darshan? So we're saying that independent study of the Vedas will not give tattva darshan. In fact, in Indian language, the word for philosophy, I believe, is darshan. Is that right? Darshan.
Sad-darshan.
Sad-darshan. Philosophy should be seen, and the ultimate philosophy is personal. And the ultimate person is the personality of Godhead. So philosophy should give us the ability to see God. Philosophy, Vedic wisdom or Vedic philosophy should give us the ability to see God. That means the transformative effect of Vedic knowledge has actually occurred. So one person is reading a book, another person is reading a book. One person has guru, the other person doesn't have guru. The person who reads the same book with guru, he sees God. The person who reads the same book without guru, he sees the book. He gets the knowledge. This is the basic idea. Veda, The purpose of Vedantic study is to perceive God, to realize God, and to see God. How can we accomplish this on our own? Such perception, darshan, is obtained by dedication. By being dedicated for one who already has that perception. The bona fide guru transmits both Vedic knowledge and ability to realize the same or to see God. Tattva-darshan. Let's see. Just like knowledge or the tattva-darshan, bhakti is the same way. It cannot be had by study. You can study every book on bhakti and not get bhakti. If you read the PhD thesis of some professors and look in their bibliography, there's 300 references in their bibliographies, because I've seen some theses. 300 references. First it lists all the Sanskrit references, because they read Sanskrit. Then it lists all the Bengali references. Then all the Hindi references. Then English references, and then their thesis. So they studied 300 books on bhakti and commentaries on bhakti, and they don't have a drop of bhakti. How so? How is it possible? Because bhakti is a gift. It's a gift from one who already has it. In other words, bhakti is transferred from the heart of a devotee, or the one who has a true bhakti, into the heart of the disciple or student. Independent study of the Vedas can be compared to approaching a jar of honey. The Vedas are like a jar of honey. New Zealand honey. Not Indian honey. New Zealand honey. And if you approach the honey jar and land on the jar and crawl around the label, you can say, oh, this is unfiltered, pure, organic, raw honey from the beehives of the forest groves of the southern Alps of New Zealand, or whatever they call it. You can give so many things because you read on the label and you can know so much about that honey. And someone says, yes, I came to the honey jar. It's golden color, it's golden yellow in color, and I went to the cap but I couldn't smell anything through the cap because the jar was sealed in plastic. But I read the label minutely and I memorized all the details of the label, where it's from and who made it and how they made it and what year it is and what year it expires and what date. I memorized it all. Yeah, that's very nice. Yes, I have a PhD in honey jars. PhD in honey jars. Acha. Did you taste the honey? Oh, no. What did honey taste? I didn't taste it. I walked on the jar. I came to the jar and I read H-O-N-E-Y. Honey. Acha. Shahad. Hindi. Shahad. in Russian, something else. Whatever. So, this is the Vedas. Independent study of the Vedas is like approaching a jar of honey without tasting it. This analogy. So independent study without taking shelter of guru is like studying the jar of honey and you never think to open it and relish its contents. If you come to a jar of honey and says, I got this honey, it's made like this, organic, oh, that's nice. Did you taste it? No. Why not? Oh, I didn't think to open it. So someone's studying the Vedas, and then you can ask them, oh, did you taste the Vedas? Have you experienced bhakti ras? Have you tasted ras? Has your heart transformed? Has your heart melted in pools of joy as you perceive the presence of the Lord in your mind and heart? Have you had that experience? Oh, gee, no, but I have a PhD in rasa theology. Rupa Goswami's rasa, the medieval rasa theology, because it was the 15th century. It's called the Medieval Rasa Theology of Rupa Goswami, an in-depth study by Professor Dinkelstein. Professor Dinkelstein from Oxford University. Right? So it's not much successful. So we never think to open and relish its contents. The essence of Vedic wisdom, of transcendental knowledge, is bhakti. The role of the guru is to transmit this spiritual knowledge to the disciple. And this spiritual knowledge, when it's received from a proper guru, it has transformative effect. What is the transformation? When one genuinely receives Vedic wisdom or vigyan, then he destroys his suffering and destroys his bondage to the material world. All the miseries are destroyed. One becomes free. Kleshagni. This is devotion. Bhakti is Kleshagni. And Shubhada. Kleshagni and Shubhada destroys all the kleshas and doshas are destroyed. And one gets liberation. The identity of the Guru. The Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavan Sri Krishna himself is telling Uddhav, a famous verse, Acharya Mam Bijaniyan. You should understand that the Guru is Krishna. The Guru is me, Mam. Krishna is speaking to Uddhav. The Guru is Krishna. How so? It means he's the supreme controller, the supreme enjoyer, the supreme maintainer. No, he's a representative. In that sense, he's Krishna. So what does this mean? Because there's one line, and this very interesting point in this verse. There's one line that says, Sarva Deva Maya Guru. Sarva Deva Maya Guru. It says the Guru, the spiritual master, the Guru, he is the sum total of all the demigods. Sarva Deva. So he doesn't look like a devata. He's an ordinary personality of this world. We can trace out his country of origin. We can trace out his gotra, or his lack of gotra, or whatever. We can trace out his lineage and his family tree. We can see that he seems to be connected over here. How is this person God? This gentleman or this lady who is serving as guru? So the point that he's saying is that the guru is... So how does a guru... How does this ordinary, seemingly ordinary person represent all the demigods? So then the commentary, Jiva Goswami, he explains, first he Sarva Deva. In Sanskrit, when we're discussing something, if you discuss one or two things, you can say Brahma Shankar Adi Devat. Brahma Shankar Adi Devata something something. So there are 33 crores of demigods. But if you say Shankar or Shiva and Brahma Adi Deva means beginning the devas, the demigods, beginning with Shiva and Brahma and all the other demigods. So when we speak Sanskrit Adi Devata, this means when it says Shiva Brahma Adi Deva, it means beginning the demigods beginning with Shiva and Brahma and all the other ones. So when it says Adi Deva, list two, because the verse is not going to write the name of 33 crores of demigods. You understand? It's a shloka from the Shastra. And it's a verse about all the demigods. So it says, Brahma, Shiva, and all the rest of them. It only mentions two. You follow? It's clear. It doesn't mention Varuna and Indra and this and that, and laga, all these demigods. It's not mentioning. So in the same way, when Jiva Goswami gives the commentary to explain Sarva Deva Maya Guru, how is the guru, how is my spiritual master, the representative, or the sum total of all the 33 million demigods, he explains it by describing the most important three demigods. Well, gods and demigods together. So everyone knows, that at least every Hindu person knows, that the most powerful personalities in the material world are three. Who are they? Brahma,
Vishnu,
and Mahesh, right? Lord Brahma, and Lord Vishnu. Two are devatas and one is the paradevata. Vishnu is the Paradevata. He's the supreme personality of God, and they're his expansions, his parts and parcels. So he's explaining by showing how these three demigods, the guru is performing the function of these three demigods. The guru is Brahma, Guru Brahma. Even they have Hindi prayers like this. Guru Brahma, Guru Shiva, Guru Vishnu. They have prayers like this. So how is it, so when he explains this, if the guru is Brahma, is Vishnu, Brahma, and Shiva, that includes all the other ones. The guru is also Varuna, the guru is also Indra, the guru is also Chandra, the guru is also Alaga Laga, whatever, the other 33 crores. So then he explains like this. He says that, how is the guru Lord Brahma? As Lord Brahma manifests the universe as the creator, the guru gives this devotion, the disciple, the seed of bhakti, which creates or manifests the disciple's relationship of love with the Supreme Lord. So he creates the devotional relationship, the prem sambandha. Jiva, Bhagavan prem sambandha is established by the creator. Creator, is, in this case, is not Brahma, but the guru. was coming in the Brahma Madhva Sampradaya. In our case, Srila Prabhupada is in Brahma Madhva Sampradaya. So that's the first thing, he acts as the creator. And now, how does the guru act as Lord Vishnu, the maintainer? Because Vishnu is maintaining and protecting the universe. So similarly, the guru nourishes and protects the devotion of his disciple by his mercy, by his prayers, by his blessings, and by his instructions. So the guru is nourishing the disciple, maintaining the disciple in this way, just as Vishnu is, by various arrangements, is maintaining and nourishing the whole universe. So how is a guru like Shiva? When he's angry. Then you understand that the Rudra feature of guru. Rudra roop. Sometimes Prabhupada would display his Rudra roop and the entire temple would be shaking. All the disciples, Prabhupada, and even they weren't even in the same room, and they would feel the vibration that Prabhupada was angry at so-and-so Swami or so-and-so whatever. And they say, what happened? Oh, Prabhupada's really angry. So no one could cool him down, not even any demigods. Only Prahlad could cool down the anger of Nisringadeva. So how is the guru Shiva? The guru Shiva is the destroyer of the cosmos. He destroys everything with his dance of destruction. Pralaya, everything gets burned up and he dances, and then the Pralaya comes after. The guru acts as Shiva to destroy and vanquish the disciple's spiritual ignorance and his material suffering in this world. So the guru, he dances on the head of the disciple in his Tandava Nritya. The Tandava Nritya is the famous Nritya. Nritya means dance. Tandava means a male dance. An ecstatic, totally intoxicated, crazy dance. Of course, it's very beautiful also. It's not some dance of some drunken person. It's very amazingly executed with the most incredible mudras and dance positions of the feet. I mean, one foot is touching the sun planet and the other foot is touching the moon planet. This is the Tandava Nritya. I mean, he makes cartwheels and handsprings look like nothing. Handsprings in gym, they have cartwheels, handsprings, backflips. It's nothing compared to the Tandava Nritya. But Shiva dances like this, and all the demigods watch. It's the most amazing dance. Everyone pays money to see dance performances. Manipuri dance troupe, right? They have Manipuri dance troupe. People pay money, big time, to see the classical dancing of India, Manipur's culture. Odissi dancing of Orissa. Or the Bharatanatyam dancing, right? So all the demigods are watching Shiva's dance. It's incredible. So they're not going to watch some cheap entertainment. It has to be top flight, first class. So of course I'm not hankering to see the Tandava Nritya of Shiva. So the guru acts like that to destroy the ignorance and suffering. The very word guru, what does it mean? No, so guru means ignorance, darkness, and ru means light. Guru. So guru takes us out of ignorance and gives us the light. Easy to remember. So there are four types of gurus. Because oftentimes we meet devotees who say, oh, I'm not getting shelter of guru. I don't have sufficient sukriti. What's wrong with me? And I'm an orphan. I'm a jiva orphan. Actually, you mean you've been cast into this material world? You have no mother or father? Because no mother or father means you're an orphan. I mean, you had somewhere, but they got lost or you got separated. So you're an orphan. You're separated from your birth mother and father. So say, oh, I'm an orphan jiva. I'm an orphan soul. I have no guru. Acha, really? I don't think you're orphan. I think you're stupid. Because you always have guru. If you don't have guru, you don't have your body. As long as you're in your body, the guru is there. The original guru, the eternal guru, the 24-hour guru, 24-hour ATM. The Chaitya guru is ATM, anytime mercy. Right? ATM means anytime mercy. So the Chaitya guru is anytime mercy yantra living right inside this yantra. The machine, the ATM, the anytime mercy machine is living right inside our hearts. As Paramatma. Atma Paramatma, soul super soul. Soul over soul. Over us, there's the Oversoul, the Paramatma, the Supreme Guider, Director. Well, this is Chaitya. Chaitya Guru means the living Guru within. He gets inspiration from within the heart. He says, yes. The Chaitya Guru says, yes. This Bhakti Marg is a good thing. You should take it up. Try it. follow it to spiritual perfection. So this is the first guru that gives some inner inspiration. He's just a voice within, an inspiration, a feeling. Something's happening. I don't know what it is, but I'm feeling compelled to go towards Krishna. So this inspiration to go to the temple, this is the action of Chaitya Guru. He's saying, yes, these Hare Krishnas are not bad. For 6 years you thought they were terrible, now you think they're all right. So that's the first guru, Chaitya Guru. He tells you, he whispers in your heart, he says, this bhakti marg is a good thing, this bhakti is good. Take it up, try it, follow it to spiritual perfection. Sarvasya chaham ridisani vishto mataks matirgyanam apovanam cha vedeshta sadaraham eva vedo vedanta kudveda vedeva cham. So this is Krishna in the heart. He's giving knowledge, guidance, inspiration. So everyone sitting in this room, whether we have guru or not, we don't have guru. Do we have some knowledge about God? Do we have any inspiration for God? Do we have any inkling towards God? Are we sitting in Radhakund right now? Are we sitting in Vrindavan? Yes. Well, who did that? You did that? All by me. I was working on this my whole life to come to this conclusion. When I was in grammar school and high school, I was just meditating. When will I sit in Radhakund for Vyasa Puja of Mahanidhi Swami? And I know you never had a thought about any kind of thing like this. But the Lord has been considering our file since a long time. So He's been giving the directions. Go here, go there, meet this person, open this book. That's all the Chaitya Guru's action. So the Chaitya Guru never sleeps. Other gurus sleep. You can't count on them. They're sleeping. You call them and their phone is switched off. You try to reach them on the phone. You have a serious problem. You call the guru and the phone is switched off. Or even better, the guru doesn't have a phone. So then the only recourse is to call out to Krishna. Right? 981-742-108-108. Right? That's his cell number. Do you know? Did you know? Krishna's cell number is 9841-108-108. Right? 10 digits, right? Okay, I got the right number. So we cry out to Krishna, we call out to Krishna. Hey Bhagavan, help me, guide me, save me. And He does. If we cry. As a super soul, Sri Krishna helps the seeker by sending the other three gurus. The super soul is our original eternal Suridam Sarvabhutanam, best friend. And the other three gurus are, we are sent to those gurus by the super soul. He sends, he arranges, he sends us to them. So the first guru that he sends us to, because they will help. He's helping from within, and these three gurus will help us from without, outside. First is Vartma. Vartma Pradarshika. Vartma means path, the way. Your grandmother's a great Hindu devotee of Radha and Krishna. She says, oh, you look so sad these days since you came back from college. You don't look very happy. I think you should, why don't you chant Hare Krishna, read these books, go to the temple? You say, well, I've been thinking about that actually. You've been thinking about that because Chaitya Guru is making you think like that. The Super Soul is making you think. And now your grandmother is speaking sakshat. Direct, why don't you come with me? I'm coming to the temple. I'm going to the temple today. We'll go for a Bhagavatam class. What's that? What's Bhagavatam class? No, it's good. It's like a philosophy class, like college. Okay, and you go. So this is Vartman Pradarshan Guru. They introduce you to the path of bhakti. So they will guide you to a qualified guru. Then there's a Diksha Guru. Diksha Guru obviously gives you mantras, spiritual initiation. So now, of course, the Shiksha Guru gives instructions. So this is a very interesting point, that the mantra received from Guru is not different from the Guru himself and the Supreme Lord. The mantras given at Diksha help manifest the disciple's eternal relationship with the Supreme Lord. This is part of the esoterica of transformative wisdom. The esoterica of transformative wisdom is that when one submits, then one gets mantra. Mantra plus Sharanagati plus seva plus mercy gives darshan of God. All these four are required. So mantra diksha is not merely a ceremony or a ritual, but it is the process of spiritual awakening. But it may take time for the disciple to complete the process. Like it may take you time to get out of bed in the morning. A clock goes off and then, oh my God, 5 more minutes, snooze alarm. So it takes some time. The alarm clock goes off at 3, maybe you don't get out of bed till 3:20 or 3:15 or longer, or you don't get out. You turn it off and go cruising and you're snoozing. So this is, it takes time, but the awakening has already started. Now I'm going to conclude in 10 minutes about the qualities of the genuine disciple, which is kind of important. If we are a disciple, we can see how genuine we are, test our genuineness by how much we have these understandings, and if we're not, we can cultivate these qualities which will make us suitable candidates to receive mantra diksha from a bona fide guru. Realizes there's no happiness, he takes exclusive shelter. And it's like this. First point, this is where it all begins. Mantra diksha begins with this. Realization there's no happiness or security in the material world. By careful observance, a real disciple will understand the material world is full of repeated birth and death, old age and disease. All of these things end with time. All relationships, all friendships, all positions, all acquirements, all attainments, they will all be destroyed and end with time. The fleeting happiness, fleeting means chanchalasukh, here and gone. Fleeting happiness of sense gratification is insubstantial and ultimately leads to distress. This is a realization that a proper candidate for diksha must have. That this so-called temporary stimulation and sensation and thrill that I attain from sense enjoyment is not substantial. It's not fulfilling to me. And it ultimately leads to distress. It doesn't provide any real and lasting happiness. If we understand the utter futility of material progress, then we can approach the guru and attain spiritual wisdom. That's the first point. The second point is to take exclusive shelter of the guru. This means that the true disciple abandons his futile hope of attaining happiness here in this world, and he surrenders fully to guru. Disciple means discipline, one who is able to accept discipline. In other words, if the guru chastises the disciple, the disciple gladly accepts it. Jai Ho, Gurudev. So this is a great blessing to be chastised by a guru. A real disciple is free from... This is a verse from 11th canto of Bhagavatam, which everyone has read, I suppose. 10th canto, verse 6. Atman yamat saro daksho nirmamo drida sovrida asattvaro Arta Jignyasur Anasuyur Amogavak. These are listing different qualities. Krishna is listing different qualities to Uddhav that a genuine disciple should have. A real disciple is free from pride, free from envy. He's expert. He's free from any sense of false possessiveness. He's resolute, a sincere friend of his guru. The word is drida. Sorida. He has a vow of firm friendship with the guru. Sincere friend of his guru, he's eager to learn the truth. He's free of hostility and he does not waste his time in useless gossip. So this is Amogavak. He doesn't waste his time in useless gossip. Now that's amazing. That Krishna is telling this 5,000 years ago to Uddhav. So that shows that gossip has been in the material world since the beginning of the material world. Yeah. Prajalpa, Gramya Katha, village talks, sports, politics, family, business, the weather, My health, my body, health, your body, health. The tax man, oh, that's politics. I think I covered all the major areas of Prajalpa. Everything and all things, at every time and all time, but Harikatha. So we're expert talking this Amoghavak, these useless talks. So Krishna's telling Uddhava, the disciple, he doesn't waste time. He doesn't have time to talk about cricket matches. And do you know that India trounced Pakistan? They trounced them, and the second day they finished them. Well, that's great. Did you know that Krishna grabbed Aristasura by the horns and threw him back 30 yards? And he was only 7 years old. Acha, hey, that's pretty. What else did he do? Change the topic. You want to talk about heroes, we'll talk about a superhero. You want to talk about romance, we'll talk about super romance. You want to talk about playing, you talk about super playing. You want to talk about gundas and dacoits, talk about Krishna. He's the biggest gunda and dacoit. He lies, he cheats, he steals. He's the best. Why not talk about the best? Because if you talk about Krishna stealing, you talk about Krishna's adultery, you want to talk about your friend's adultery. Did you know that Mr. Gupta is going out with Mr. Chatterjee's wife? Acha? My God. Well, where do they go? How do they meet? Oh, you know, this, that. You get really deep into it. You want to hear about the adulterous affairs of other friends and foes, or whatever. So forget about it. Talk about the adulterous affairs of Krishna. He's not married to anybody, but he goes out with everybody's wife. Every single young wife, not old ones, excuse me. All you old wives in the audience have to retire. But all the young wives, they're called Brajabadhu. Brajabadhu. Badhu means young wife. Newly married wives. Fresh, tender, soft, gentle, submissive. They haven't learned the ropes yet. Once they grow up, they're not tender, they're tough. They're not submissive, they're aggressive. They're not... So he goes out with all these young wives, newly married wives, and he dances. And Rasa dance. And he goes to Jalkeli, splashes water, and they eat, and they have all kinds of good fun. And they're all married to somebody else. So let's talk about this. And then the Rid Rogam. Achirina, this Kamam Rid Rogam, the heart disease will be destroyed. This is a very important point that we have to be reminded of again and again. Krishna Katha, Krishna Katha, Krishna Katha. We should put up billboards, you know, these signboards, what do they call them? Hoarding. In India, they call them hoardings. In America, you say billboard. These big boards, we make advertisement. Drink Johnny Walker. Right? All these things. Johnny Walker is walking into your life to send you to hell. So follow him and go to hell. Mahajana Yena Katha Supanta. Mahajana Yena Naraka. Naraka Panta. So you follow these Mahajans, these so-called great, ridiculous personalities, you go to Narak. The soul craves love and devotion. Krishna craves love and devotion. Krishna is greedy for love and devotion. The soul is greedy for love and devotion. So, Krishna says that prasadam bhoga should be offered with love and devotion. Bhakti prayachati. This is what we... Oh, Prabhu, come over for some devotion. I'm serving out some devotion today. Acha. Sounds pretty tasty. I'm serving out love today. Oh, love, is love tasty? Is love desirable? Is love fulfilling? Love is desirable. Love is tasty. Love is fulfilling. The ultimate fulfillment is love. And that's bhakti. That's devotion. So we want to get that devotion, then we have to always speak Harikatha, not Gramyakatha. So we should establish these big signboards everywhere, all over Delhi, Bombay. Harikatha only, no Gramyakatha. And people say, what's that mean? You know, it's a black board and has like white or yellow, I guess yellow and white print on it. And then, you know, Harikatha only, no Gramyakatha. So as soon as our spouse or starts speaking something, oh Prabhu, you know this or that, hey, no Gramyakatha, band hoga. Srila Prabhupada ki.